The views and comments expressed on The Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on The Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
Live from the Space Talk Radio Studios, it's The Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting live to four continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy, here's the founder and host of The Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday Space Show. It's a great day. The Space Shuttle Discovery made it back safely. It was a great test mission. Time to move on with that, and we're all appreciative of that. Couldn't let the show go by without making that comment right off the top. A couple of quick announcements, and then we have a great guest with us all the way from Glasgow, Scotland. And later in the show, you'll be surprised to hear what the press is like on space and the shuttle in Glasgow. But that'll come up later in the program. First of all, for those of you that want to call the program tonight, the Seattle number is 425-373-5527. The toll-free number for everyone else, including those of you outside the United States, remember it's an MCI number, is 1-866-687-7223. Email is dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or thespaceshow@gmail.com. And those of you working with chat on Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, the screen name, all one word, Space Show Chat. Don't forget to visit our website, thespaceshow.com. The full comprehensive newsletter is there. All the coming events, it's uploaded every Monday and changed as often as necessary. If you want the email short version, send an email to Dr. Space, and we'll be glad to enter your subscription. Our programs are all archived. As you know, they're now in the MP3 format. From May forward, they're being podcast, and have at it and enjoy them. And hopefully you will find the information important and something that really interests you. The Space Show store, you've heard me for months tell you that it's going to be expanding. It has expanded. Check it out. Let me know what you think about it. Hopefully you'll see some items there that might interest you or your family or your friends. And above all, the support the Space Show button is there. We really appreciate all of you who help us. And those of you that will be helping us, it is a massive undertaking to keep the Space Show going and do what we do. And so come on board and join us. And we appreciate anything that you can do. That button takes you directly to PayPal. And really and truly, anything you can do to help out the Space Show is very much appreciated. As I said, our guest today, all the way from Glasgow, Scotland, is David Harland, and he is the author of a new book titled How NASA Learned to Fly in Space, a very appropriate topic for today. Mr. Harland is a space historian. He has had a very prolific output of books in recent years, including Exploring the Moon, the Apollo Expeditions, the Story of the Space Shuttle, the Story of the Space Station, Mir. And he has a website that we'll talk about in a few minutes that lists all of these books. There's quite a few of them. And you can find them on Amazon or Amazon UK. And so it's a real great honor to have you with the show today. Mr. Harland, how are you?
Hello, Dave. I'm feeling okay considering the hour here.
That, and I know you're recovering from a little bit of cough, so you're doing stellar performance for us tonight. We thank you very much. It is really appropriate to talk about how NASA learned to fly, because, especially in space, because they are really flying in space today with something as complex as the space shuttle. How did it all come about, and how did you decide that you were going to write a book with this title and go into this subject?
Well, it was Very early on when I thought about writing this book, I started writing in 1997. And I wrote a book about the shuttle in 98. I wrote a book about the Mir space station. And then I thought I would do one about the Apollo missions, go back in time. And that was done. And before the Apollo missions, there were the Gemini missions. So I thought in 1999, I will do one about the Gemini missions. And the question, obviously, was where to get sufficient material to tell a very interesting story. So I had, in those years, developed a relationship with the NASA History Office in Washington, and in particular with Dr. Roger Lonius, who was the chief historian. I mentioned to him that I was thinking of doing something about Gemini, and he had seen my previous books because I'd sent him copies for his library. And a few weeks later, three enormous boxes arrived in the post, much to my surprise. And when I opened them up, on paper were the complete transcripts of the Gemini missions, which, when stacked up, is a pile of paper 4 feet high.
Wow.
So I put them into order, figured out what I had, thought to myself, well, this book is going to be a very big book. And I thanked him profusely. And then for 3 or 4 years, almost nothing happened because it just took too long to get the thing organized. In that meantime, I was, of course, writing other books. And at some point, I said to myself, well, I must get back to this. And I did. It took about a year. I wrote that book. You obviously, when you write a book, you start thinking, what is a good title? And apart from titles like The Gemini Missions and so on, I was talking to some people about what it might possibly have as a title, and someone said, well, what's it about? I said, how will NASA learn to fly in space? And somebody said, well, there's your title. And it was. It's a good title. I liked it. And Apogee, who took the book, they liked it as well. That's how that book got started.
Why did they learn to fly in space with Gemini and not Mercury?
Well, Mercury, which was started a week after NASA was established in October 1958, was to put a man into orbit and bring him back, and it had no requirement for maneuverability in space other than for attitude control, which is which way the ship points. The only engines on the ship were the retro rockets to bring it back down to the ground. It had no maneuvering capability. It couldn't do anything. They very early on, NASA started looking at how they could rendezvous with a space station, because if you're going to have a space station, you have to maneuver to get to it. And they looked at how you would rendezvous in a theoretical sense. They were looking at the theory of it, and there was no requirement to do it in the terms of budget. They didn't have the budget for it. But at the beginning of 1961, NASA was in the situation where Mercury was their program. It was almost at the point where it was going to launch its first missions. And there was no follow-on to Mercury. It was a real risk from their point of view that after Mercury, manned spaceflight would stop. So at the beginning of 1961, NASA was in a bit of a quandary whether it would have any program as a result of Mercury, to follow Mercury. And then when the Russians beat the Americans by putting Vostok 1 up into space before Alan Shepard, and the Yuri Gagarin completed an orbit, whereas Alan Shepard several weeks later only completed a 300-mile ballistic arc down the Atlantic Test Range, there was this panic, it must catch up with the Russians. And as everyone knows, Kennedy, and a few weeks later, after Shepard's flight, 25th of May, 1961, said, we're going to go to the moon. That immediately imposed a tremendously audacious mission within a very tight timescale upon NASA. It had to learn to go to the moon, land on the moon, return a man safely to the Earth by the end of the decade. And all it had was 15 minutes of ballistic arc with Alan Shepard. By the end of 1961, it had decided that it would be a three-man spaceship for Apollo, and the question was, how would it land on the moon? Would it the whole thing land, or would another little spaceship specifically designed to land go? Would that be on the nose of the main spaceship and land on the moon, come back, and then be thrown away? And if so, that would require rendezvous. And because they didn't want to wait until Apollo was flying in order